Boys, welcome back after a bit of a break. Neil, how's it going this week, man?
I'll let you know on Friday. I had a job interview yesterday, and they said I'd hear back about if I'm getting moved forward or not on Friday. So I think that'll kind of determine my feelings about the rest of the week.
Okay.
Fair point.
Well, if you get it, we'll celebrate and we'll play some Murder Mystery Club, and if you don't get it, we'll drown your sorrows and we'll play some Murder Mystery Club, or we'll hang out on Discord or something. That same Friday night, they are having a movie party of The Lighthouse by Robert Eggers at the Alamo Draft House here in the Twin Cities. So if I'm maybe I will be successful in convincing Xander to go to that with me if I'm not busy Friday night. So we'll see.
Actually, I never heard. How did he respond to Houseu?
Oh, he really, really liked it. I was like dying with a sinus infection when we went to see it. So I spent most of the time like trying desperately not to cough on people. But I think everybody involved had a pretty good time.
Nice.
But yeah, he'll have to tell you more about it. We didn't get to talk a lot after the movie. Everybody had to kind of split. Okay, well, I hope the job goes good for you. I can tell you from my experience, there have definitely been times where I've come away from a job interview being like, I don't know how that went. Like, I didn't think that went as well as it could have, and then I ended up getting that job. So, Godspeed to you. Who knows what's going to happen? Gideon, what's going on this week, man?
Not too much. Watched a couple movies. I am super close to finally being done with Ghost of Tsushima and platinuming it. I
All
need
right.
two
Nice.
trophies. I'm two missions away from beating New Game Plus. I just gotta do all the duels and I gotta do all the side quests, but I think I'm like halfway through with the side quests.
Okay.
And
With the
then
boring ass side quest.
yeah, just fucking everyone talking to me and I'm just over
Just
it.
people just following people around while they talk to you mostly.
Yeah, just people crying about how their husband was kidnapped by Mongols or something. I need to kill them
Yeah.
all. Yeah, you know. I did watch a couple movies on Halloween night. I watched the original 1978 Halloween for the first time.
Yes.
Really
Yes,
liked it.
dude.
Really fun.
How was it? That's one of my all-time favorites.
I liked it quite a bit. I think it really holds up. I've only seen a couple of the, like, I don't know if they're like remakes or like the reboots from like 2018, like Halloween and Halloween Kills, but I'm excited to like dig more into those, and like I still need to see like Nightmare Before Elm Street or Nightmare on Elm Street and stuff like that. I also watched the new Frankenstein movie on Netflix, and I really liked that. That was a lot of fun too.
Where do you stand on Guillermo del Toro? You're like a big fan, right?
I like him quite a bit. He's not like my all-time favorite, but I
Yeah.
love what he does for like the practical effects and like the creature work and just like the set design. All that stuff is just really cool. But I don't know if I like really revisit too much of his films like a lot. But I want to get more into his like full filmography and check out a lot. And then
You
obviously I
love
watched.
Pacific Rim, though, right?
Oh, I love Pacific Rim. Yeah, I mean
Yeah, yeah,
anything with giant robots, I'm pretty much there.
yeah.
And then lastly, I've been playing a bunch of Arc Raiders. I'm like level 14 now, so
Oh,
that's been
yeah. How are you
fun.
liking? How are you liking that?
It's really good, you know. I got it, I think, like the day of or day after it had its full release, or I don't know if it was like 1.0 or if it just like came out. But yeah, it's been fun. It's really challenging. It plays great on PS5. It has a really cool visual flair, and the audio is really awesome. It's just really challenging. But yeah, it'd be fun to play with some like you guys or some other friends. But
Yeah,
I'd recommend it.
I've been thinking about hopping it. It was either that or Battlefield 6, and I think Ark kind of seems like it'd be more up my alley. Like, I don't know about you guys, like Battlefield always sounds cool, and then I get in there and it's just pure chaos for 20 minutes, and I feel like I don't have any control over like whether we win or lose. It's just like I feel like there's just I'm like the cowboy at the end of the movie with his foot in a stirrup. It's like you're still the star of the show, but you're not really in control of like where things are going.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's what's nice with Ark is like I've been playing pretty much exclusively solo. Like I'll squad up and stuff, but I'm not really using the voice chat just because I have it like in the living room and I don't want to be like just shouting in the living room while it's like doing something else.
Yeah, of course.
And you know, I'll try out the voice stuff later. I'm sure it's fun. But yeah, like sometimes like my teammates are just idiots and you can just kind of ignore them and go extract on your own or do whatever, just kind of like slink away. The robots are really cool and really fucking scary. Yeah, great sound design, great movement system.
And I didn't know that it was the same team who did the finals until just recently. Cool.
Yeah, and I guess I think a lot of them worked on like Star Wars Battlefront 2, like the newer version, not the pandemic one from back in the day.
Okay.
But I feel like you guys especially would like it, and it seems almost like a sister game to like what is it, Helldivers 2, in the sense that it's like $40, it's like a big hit for like exclusively multiplayer game, really good with buddies, right, that kind of thing. Yeah,
I think I'm gonna have to try that out. It kind of seems like the new hotness this year.
Yeah, I'd recommend it. I don't feel like you guys would feel like it's a waste of money or anything. It's pretty polished too. I haven't had any connection errors or bugs or anything like that, so that's been nice.
Yeah, well, cool beans, man. And the how's the battle pass going?
Pretty good. I think I'm almost level 30 in Fortnite right now. I've been really enjoying the map. They changed the whole map. It's like smaller, but it's all like Springfield, and there's tons of like Easter eggs and stuff.
Right.
And it's just been fun. Like it only lasts like this month because it's like a mini season. Like the season will be done, I think, by December 1st. I don't know what's next, but I heard rumors it might be SpongeBob, which I would love if they did like the same thing with like how they made Springfield the map. If they did Bikini Bottom the map, I'd lose my shit if they did that. So yeah, I've been having fun with that. And I guess last thing I'll mention about Ghost is so I'm gonna finish up. I'm playing on PS4 version on PS5, and then I have the Iki Island DLC to do, which I'd probably just play on PS5 because I feel like I need to just knock it out, because otherwise I'm like never ever gonna get around to it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, fair enough. Well, it doesn't count for the platinum, so like I just got the platinum and I bounced. I think I did like the critical path in Iki Island, but it was like mostly just more of the same.
I thought about that too. Just like get the platinum, take a break, go back to Death Stranding, you know, get some cinema in me. And
play some real games.
Yeah, and then come back to the DLC when I want to slice dudes. But anyways,
I think that sounds like a good. Well, that sounds like a good compromise, I think. Well, I just platinum Ghost of Yotei, so I feel your pain on platinuming these games. That was it wasn't a difficult platinum, but it was an annoying one where like there's no way to filter different icons on your map. There's no way to say like, hey, give me all these icons and filter out all the other ones. So you just spend a lot of your time like picking through like, have I done this? Have I done this? I don't like when a game for a platinum makes you like go to the internet to figure out like what you have and haven't done, or like to find the locations of things. Like I don't like being distracted by my devices. So I like just being able to like be in the game and not have to like look at YouTube. And there was a lot of looking at YouTube to get that. So,
especially if it has like a nice codex or something, so just something to help you figure it out within the game. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. Having all those tools in the game is very helpful for that. So, got that done. Let's see. I just got back. I was in Iowa all weekend, so I haven't really been playing a whole lot. I did find somebody on Facebook Marketplace earlier today who wanted $150 for a PSVR2 unit. So I went over and I did the deed, picked that up, got it back here, and I've been playing a little Luminous, a little Tetris Effect, and just little things like that. It's been mostly okay, although I have to gripe about technology for a second. There's a lot of time. I don't know if it's like because this is a PSVR that's registered for somebody else's console or like what's going on here. But there's this problem where like if you start up a game, a lot of these games, like a lot of these room scale VR games with the motion controllers, it will then not detect the motion controllers. You have to like boot up the game with the DualSense, and then when it says, "Hey, it's time for you to boot up your motion controllers," then you have to boot up the motion controllers.
What the
And
heck?
like, I know, I think it's some, it's got to be something to do with the fact that like this has been registered to another PS5 or something, or there's no way it's intended to work that way. Because like trying to feel around for a DualSense while you've already got the VR headset on your head is like an impossible, you know, it's just so silly. So
Does it have
and
like
I
a
can't get
pass through or anything?
there is pass through, but it doesn't like come up all the time. And also like my living room is like not even big enough to do the room scale stuff. So
Right.
I can see why VR never took off. I mean, like I knew that I wasn't gonna get like a ton of use out of this thing, but I just like I'm surprised at how bad the user experience is, like right out of the box.
Damn. That's rough.
That's it. You know, it's like better than PSVR 1, but that's like saying, you know, shit is better than stink. You know, and it's like they're both pretty bad, and you know, it's fine. Like once you get in there and everything starts working, it's like really cool. But you know, it's still basically like a novelty. I can understand like why everybody kind of moved away from doing these games. Anyway, we are here to talk about the movie Color Out of Space. When this come out, 2019, did it say?
Yeah,
that sounds right.
And who have you, Neil? You brought this movie to the podcast. What's your history with Color Out of Space? How did you hear about this movie? What made you want to bring it? Yada yada yada.
So I have never seen this before. I had read the original H.P. Lovecraft story that it's based on a
Nice.
long time ago. But it wasn't one of the ones that like I remembered strongly. A friend loaned me a like compendium, like the complete works of H.P. Lovecraft. And had you asked me what the story of it was before rewatching this, I would not have been able to tell you. I know I had read it, but it wasn't one of the ones that like stuck with me. But there were three factors that made me pick this one. First was that I thought it would be a fun transition from spooky season into Nick Cage November, since it's a horror movie and it stars Nick Cage. And when I was looking some facts about it, the director is a guy named Richard Stanley. And I believe that this is his first movie since he made the 96 adaptation of The Island of Dr. Moreau with Marlon Brando, which is famously like one of the biggest production fuck-ups in movie history. It's a wild movie to watch. Like almost like unrateable by our standards because it's just so bizarre. But I would highly recommend watching it at least once just to see like this level of insanity on screen.
Okay,
Looking at the
interesting.
poster
So
right now. Looks interesting.
how did you first hear about it? I should ask. Like, I understand you wanting to move it from I had the same thought of moving from horror season into Nick Cage November as I was watching it. I was like, oh, I see what Neil's up to here. This is clever.
I think I saw it originally like in a Facebook feed, like one of those lame Facebook, like
Like a reel
We
or
Love
something.
Science Fiction pages, just like pops up and just says Nick Cage to
Right.
star in adaptation of Color Out of Space.
Right, okay.
And like it just kind of like lingered in the back of my head as, oh, that's a thing that happened. But I never
Right.
took the
And
time
did
to
you know
watch
that
it.
this was a H.P. Lovecraft joint before before you knew it was a movie?
I mean, yeah. I mean, I remember reading the story. Like, I recognized the
Right.
name.
Okay, cool. How about you, kid? What did you know about this before before you watched
I knew it was an H.P. Lovecraft story, but I never read it. I do have a book similar to like what Neil was talking about, where it collects all his stories, but I hadn't read this one. I pretty much only seen like the poster or like the cover of it, just kind of like looking at movies on Amazon or just like shopping online, that kind of thing. I'd seen like the Steelbook artwork for it. And then kind of when I booted it up, because I rented the Blu-ray from the library, and it was, I think it was produced by Spectre Vision.
Yeah.
Who the year before they did Mandy, which we is a nice connection for us. So that's, I mean, I pretty much only knew that Nick Cage was in it. It's like sci-fi horror, H.P. Lovecraft. Didn't know anything else about it. Wasn't sure like what the plot was like or what the reception was, really. I mean, I like glanced at the rating on like Letterboxd and IMDb, but that was about it. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, I'm kind of similar to you guys in that like I was vaguely familiar with it. Like I had heard about this movie. I didn't know it was H.P. Lovecraft. And honestly, I had kind of, there was a string of these movies that all came out after Mandy, because Mandy, I think, like made a lot of money and was pretty popular, that all are like weird science fiction joints starring Nick Cage. Like there were probably between 5 and 10 of these movies that all came out within like, let's say, the last 5 years since Mandy, so 2018 to 2023. And he kind of had a little bit of a renaissance. There's one that with like the word ghost in the title. Do you guys know what I'm talking about? I'll look it up. Well, if I look up Nicolas Cage's filmography, I'm going to be scrolling for a really long time. It has its own Wikipedia page. But yeah, so like I think everybody kind of liked Mandy, and that kind of like brought him back in a big way. And then there was like a bunch of these movies that, and you know, like something that I've mentioned really liking about him is that like Nick Cage is not afraid to starring something that's like kind of low budget. I mean, he's like willing to work for just getting rid of his tax burden, I guess. I really appreciate that about him. So yeah, I was like totally unfamiliar with this, aside from the idea that like it was probably going to be I don't want to say like an 80s throwback, but kind of have that vibe about it, that like purpley kind of science fiction 80s vibe to it that Mandy had. So otherwise I was kind of completely blind going into it. I didn't know anything about it. So Neil, do you want to give us like a little bit of a synopsis of kind of what this is about?
Yeah, so if you're not familiar with Lovecraft, his big focus was cosmic horror. Basically the idea that there's like things out there that the human mind just can't process. So like the idea of insanity in his stories is oftentimes like we think a person is crazy because they've had a glimpse of these like deeper truths, but because they've got like a base understanding of it, they just seem totally insane to us. Or like certain events are manifestations of like these elder gods. Like I forget exactly which one, but when a nuclear explosion occurs, that's like one of the elder gods briefly appearing in our plane of existence. Like it's just too big for a human to comprehend. And so I think that translates kind of well into this story, where like it doesn't really try to explain itself too much because there's no mm-hmm. logical explanation, right?
Right, like it will be explained.
But the basic premise is Nick Cage is the father of a family. They're living out in the woods, and one night a meteor crashes in their backyard, and strange things start to happen around their property, whether it's the animals on their sort of like hobby farm, the vegetables, or the family itself.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this is a fairly good explanation. And also Tommy Chong shows up.
Yep.
That was nice. I will say I wasn't aware that he was in the movie, and then he showed up, and I said, "Oh shit!"
Yeah. Fun fact.
Yeah, go ahead.
The wife, the actress who plays her, she's in another one of your favorites, Sam. She's one of the crew members in Event Horizon.
Oh, you know, I wouldn't have made that connection, but I'm going to have to go back and look at that and find out exactly who that is. But yeah. Everybody else, it's kind of like Tommy Chong, Nick Cage, and everybody else is kind of a minor actor. I don't think I recognize anybody else in this movie.
No, I thought I recognized the daughter, but not, like she's been in stuff that I've heard of but haven't seen.
I recognize the youngest son. He was in the Netflix series of Haunting on Hill House or Haunting of Hill House.
Oh,
yeah, he was in that. Pretty sure.
Yeah. Good. Anything to add on the synopsis? Anything you want to like add in there to Neil's description to maybe give people a better idea of kind of how things progress or what's going on?
I mean, yeah. Like, you know, there's those like strange happenings, and it's kind of a slow and then kind of rapid descent into madness, and like, you know, their greenery is getting distorted, their minds are, you know, they're acting really crazy. There's lots of body horror stuff going on. There's like, they even talk about like time getting like not feeling right and just getting warped, and obviously seeing the purple magenta all throughout. I don't know if we mentioned the hydrologist who he like starts to notice like the water's all messed up, and he's telling him not to drink it. And he's like doing tests on it and stuff like that. And he's having like strange things happen to him too. Yeah, I think that's where I'd leave it.
Yeah. And was anybody surprised? Cause usually like in a horror movie, either like the black guy is the first guy to go, or the geologist is the first guy to die. And in this, the black geologist made it all the way through the movie. Did anybody else? Just me. Okay.
I thought it was interesting how they like he's just a hydrologist, and everyone almost was like, "Oh, thank God you're here, Mr. Hydrologist." It's like, he's just like testing the water, guys. Like,
yeah. Okay, come on.
You know, guys. Like, I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, what's the paper you used to do that with? What do they call that?
A test strip.
Yeah, the pH strip. Yeah, that's right. Okay. Yeah. I think we did one of those in seventh grade science or something like that.
The nearby town was Arkham. I thought that was funny.
Yeah, which is, Neil, you might be able to shed some more light on this, but Arkham is like a, from what I read, not a real town. It's like a fictional town that is used in repeatedly in H.P. Lovecraft's stories.
Yeah, basically, he sort of like reinvents Massachusetts. Like, I think Boston is occasionally referenced, but really like Arkham sort of is Boston, but it's got a darker vibe to it. And then like, there's like little Easter eggs and stuff. So like 9 out of 10 characters from H.P. Lovecraft stories are associated with Miskatonic University, which is the name of a major river that goes to the town, and it's in Arkham. So I think the hydrologist has like a Miskatonic U sweater at some point.
Cool.
But yeah, it basically means Boston.
Okay. Except yeah, interesting.
With gothy, witchy vibes.
Yeah, some unsightly business happening around the premises.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, the way I would kind of describe it, I guess, from my point of view, is like you've got this weird kind of hippie family out in the woods. Like, mom is maybe the primary breadwinner. She's got some sales job. She, and the Wi-Fi is always going out. Daughter is into witchcraft. Dad is kind of a strange old dude who got the farm from his dad, enjoys his bourbon, has some freak outs, and loves his alpacas, RIP. Daughter's into witchcraft, is doing some sort of summoning ritual on the water's edge, and we don't know that this is what caused this giant meteor to like crash into their farm, this like giant glowing alien meteor that smells like shit and is glowing purple and is like obviously evil. But yeah, she's doing some business. The older brother is a pothead, and then the younger brother is like
just a child.
Basically no character at all, but he's just there to be like scared of things in the woods that like the camera is not revealing to us. He's there to like have giant eyes through his glasses and just be scared. He's just scared. Mm-hmm. So yeah, the meteor crashes, and then weird shit starts happening to the family little by little, and then it escalates and it gets exponentially worse like as the movie goes on, until like the last 40 minutes of the movie are just like complete really nightmare fuel. But like nothing happens for the first hour of this movie. Like it's all, I would say, pretty tame until the mom like accidentally chops her fingers off, and then things start to really go bad. I will say, getting what you said earlier about like the meteor not only causing weird things to happen to matter, but it also seems to distort time. Mm-hmm. I thought this movie did a really good job of making you feel like you don't know what day it is, and you don't know how many days have passed, and you don't know how time is progressing. Because this movie does mess with your perception of like the in-universe time, and you start to get the feeling that like all the characters are not on the right time scale. You know, things are like happening quickly or things are happening slowly, and I thought that aspect of it was really good. I don't know if either of you noticed that.
No, I would agree. I think that there's I think a lot, it's sort of implied they're oftentimes like acting out of sync with each other. Mm-hmm. Like the brother and the sister, like sometimes it feels like the brother's been out in the field for like 3 days.
Yeah,
and then he comes back and spend like a few hours for the sister character.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. There's all weird sorts of like weird time jumps where you get the feeling that people have been gone for longer than some characters think they're gone. And then that kind of plays into I'm kind of jumping ahead here, but at the very end of the movie, like Nick Cage is insisting to other people around him. He's like, no, my whole family is like right here, and they're not there. And then like once the true climax of the movie happens, you see that they actually are all right there. It's almost like Bloodborne-ian, and it's in the way it reveals that stuff.
I mean, Bloodborne is totally
Lovecraft, right? Yeah. So that was cool. So did you guys think the pacing was kind of slow at first, or how did you guys kind of react? Well, I guess we'll just kind of give our 10,000-foot thoughts. Gideon, how about we just get your 10,000-foot thoughts, and we can jump into kind of how we felt more qualitatively about things.
So I was a bit let down overall. There's a couple things I do want to shout out. I mean, obviously, I do think the visual effects are really nice. I like some of the cinematography and just like the area it was shot in. I do like that the music was by Colin Stetson, who he did the music for Hereditary, and he did some music for Red Dead Redemption 2. But I will say, I don't even know if I really recognize, aside from like one or two moments, that like his music felt that like prominent or like in the forefront. I like seeing, Tommy Chong, but I think this is actually the first movie I've ever seen with him in it. I haven't seen any of his other work. I want to get to it, you know, obviously.
If he's Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yeah. But even that, it's like, I thought he was a fun character, but I kind of wanted more. I really liked the stuff near the end of his like time in the movie where it's playing that like scary, trippy, like tape recordings of him giving like, almost like a warning. I thought that was cool. A lot of the character, I know they're all going like crazy, and kind of like you had said, Sam, like not everybody's not on the same page, and mostly just because of everything that's happening. But like the kind of character logic was kind of frustrating me, where like, you know, the witchy daughter like cuts herself like crazy, and then they kind of like don't really do anything with that. Obviously there's a lot of other shit going on at that point. And like the older brother, like, yeah, he's a stoner, but he also just kind of just seems like, I don't know, he seems like he's bored or something, like waiting to get picked up from after school or something. Like he didn't seem like he was really into it. So I just had a few like issues with that. The pacing, I don't know if it probably was a bit slow for me for the first like hour or so, but I didn't totally mind it because I kind of liked how it was like slowly ratcheting up. And then once thing like shit really hits the fan, like I feel like it really ramps up and things get really, really crazy. But then again, with some of the like character choices and logic, it just kind of like frustrated me. Like I felt like a lot of characters talked about like, oh, we need to leave, we need to get out of here, and then they just like kept talking about it instead of like making attempts, or like, oh, he's like, oh, the car is not working, and then like no one is trying to like get the horse or like just start walking or something. Like, so I guess that's my 10,000 foot thoughts.
Okay. So yeah, little column A, little column B. How about you, Neil?
It's not a super long movie. I think it's just under 2 hours. And like pacing wise, I think that I generally enjoyed the slow burn. And like actually at about like an hour 15, I had to take a break. Like I was just like body horror is a major feature of this, and I was just like, I need to step away. I need to not do this for a minute because, that just fucks with me super hard. But I do think that that first hour I think is generally good. But I feel like there's like 15 minutes that have been cut from this movie that should have been somewhere in that first hour, like take something else out. Because later in the movie, there's as they're going crazier and crazier, there's lots of like allusions to like the dysfunctional aspects of the family, like it's like early, like at the very beginning, the daughter is doing her Wiccan ceremony because she's trying to cure her mother of cancer, I think. And then it's brought up later, like Nick Cage, her husband, like he relates being in the cancer ward when his father died to like the smell of that, to the meteor, and then like his wife smells like that. There's a lot of like daddy issues that Nick Cage has that aren't really like, I don't need them explicitly stated, but I needed a little more of a drip feed. And then like he's got kind of a rocky relationship with the daughter, which again is just kind of touched on, but just not enough for them like again going crazy and having their crazy fights. I think there was like some characterization that got left on the cutting room floor that needed to be in there. That said, like the last like 45 minutes of this movie is pretty immaculate, I'd say.
Yeah, it's really, really, really good stuff at the end. A lot of the times, like, I find that my overall feelings about a movie are based on kind of like what my expectations were. And I was so ready for this to be just like a Mandy knockoff, or like riding the coattails of Mandy. And I think overall I found a movie that I personally I feel is like kind of on par or like right up there with Mandy. Like I don't hold Mandy's in like high regard as you guys do. I think I gave it like a 4. I'm kind of right there with Color Out of Space. I think, this has a much stronger central story, and it isn't as much of just a mood bath as Mandy is. I agree with you, Neil. I could have done with a lot less of the well, I shouldn't say that. Like, either commit to all this other family drama happening on the periphery, or don't do it at all, is kind of how I feel. Like, they kind of don't do a whole lot with the mom having the cancer. They like briefly mention, like, Nick Cage is like, oh yeah, it reminds me of the smell of the cancer ward, and
Or like
the
when he's like
daughters.
being abusive towards the daughter, then like he has like a moment of clarity. He's like, I'm not a monster, I'm not my father. Like, okay.
There's all this other stuff on the periphery, or like, how does the mom's business stuff relate to the rest of the story? I don't really understand what the connection between like her dropping calls And like, how does that relate to, because it seems like they hit it so often, it seems like it's going to relate in some way, and then it doesn't really,
I mean,
right? Like, am I wrong on
it's
that?
kind of there. It's kind of there is that the entity is messing with communications.
Yeah, that's what
Right.
I'd say, with
Okay.
technology.
But yeah, like it is kind of clumsy in that, like at certain points, like she, the mother and Nick Cage at certain points like ramp up to like 11 at times where like, no, I, guys, I think we're at like the point where you should be at a 6. Why are you at 11?
Yeah.
Like
Because you're
it,
Nicolas Cage.
well, so fun fact, the director, can you guys guess what the director's favorite Nick Cage movie is?
I can I'm gonna guess. I don't know, but I'm gonna guess it's a Vampire's Kiss, right?
Yeah, and he asked Nick Cage to channel his performance from Vampire's Kiss to this,
Oh, he
which
totally does.
but like I don't know like exactly like you know if they shot the movie in like sequential order or you know more commonly like you know they'll shoot things out of order. But there are definitely times where like Nick Cage is at 11, but like at the
Yeah.
point in the story that we're at, we should be at a 6 or a 7 kind of thing. Like it's a little disjointed in that way. And in the same way, like the mom, I think is like, you know, trying to match him. I'm thinking of the scene where Nick Cage has just brought in like his harvest of tomatoes and stuff, and he's like biting into them, spitting them out, like
Yeah.
which I think is like a really good scene. And then she's like freaking out because her calls are dropping on her financing job, and like you know she's matching his energy like very impressively so, but like. You guys shouldn't be at this level of crazy yet. Because then like the next couple scenes like they're at a much lower level and it's like where did this energy go?
Yeah, it feels like they're kind of like throttling the insanity, like to and fro at different levels to varying degrees of success. And I like when I had glanced at some people's like feelings on the movie, like I feel like this is a movie like for people, not like us where we really enjoy and appreciate Nick Cage. Where if you're trying to like win someone over, I feel like they could have a really hard time with him in this. And I saw people saying like he was like overacting and just going way to 11 and just like being really, really crazy. I will say in defense, one thing that I really liked is like when he's trying to start the car and he's like freaking out and like bashing the roof of the car and the steering wheel. I love that. I thought that was like one of my favorite moments. But I totally like see where people who aren't already fans of Nick Cage, they would just like write this off.
See, I really like him in this movie, and one of the things I was going to bring up was like, I think we talk about at the end of every Nick Cage November that like he's a very particular weapon, and the director has to know how to utilize him correctly. And I
Yeah.
think this movie is such a great utilization of his particular skill set, not to paraphrase Liam Neeson there. Like he is just a weird kind of subdued, offbeat, quirky dad. He seems like the kind of dad that would stress to you the importance of quality speaker cable for your hi-fi setup, like early in the movie. And then he is able, like when shit starts going crazy, he is able to ramp it up into being like, classic, absolutely off the wall Nick Cage. And when he busts out he does the same voice as he does from Vampire's Kiss, that New York, I would say, like, not to bring it to this, but that almost Trumpy kind of affectation. He just dials it up, and it matches everything in the movie around it. Like later in the movie is just so insane and off the wall. When he gets to that point, you're just like, yeah, he's the perfect person. Although I will agree with you guys, I agree that he does it. It's out of place a little bit too. Like he gets there, he gets to 11 while Neil, you said it best. Like he gets to the 11 when the movie is still kind of sitting at a 6 or a 7. It's not quite there yet, and he's spitting out the tomatoes and just going absolutely bonkers.
Complaining
Yeah, like
about being
at a certain
offhanded.
point, like he's being like sassier to his daughter than his daughter has ever been to our knowledge.
Yeah.
Oh my god, that scene was hilarious.
Her saying fuck doesn't seem to be the problem. You might be the problem here, Nick.
Yeah.
One other thing that I want to say is, like, I don't know how old any of the kids were supposed to be.
Yeah.
And that led to a couple of points where, like, you know, there's kind of like this implied, like, romantic interest between the hydrologist character and the daughter, which, you know, could have been fine or interesting, except, like, okay, like, you're obviously like a, I forget if he said, if he says that he's like an intern with the water place or if he's like a full-time employee, but, like, he's like at least 20 and yeah. She's still living with her parents and she has an older brother who's also still living with her parents. So, like, is she like 16? I'm just not quite sure.
When I Googled it, the movie says she's 14, which I thought that was strange too. I like, obviously maybe the parents are alluding, maybe it's more just like a crush or whatever, but I still thought that was a bit awkward and kind of strange to have in at all.
Yeah, that's like one of those perception things. Like, now that we're all older, you know, teenagers look like children to us. But that it also, like, it's messed up because people who are cast as 15-year-olds in movies are almost always like 20. Mm. You know, it kind of like the Ferris Bueller situation. I think what's the kid with the Gordie Howe jersey's name in Ferris Bueller?
Cameron.
Cameron.
He's supposed to be like 18 in the movie. And the actor who played him was like 35, like,
holy, you know,
something like this. So, yeah, it's odd things like that do happen from time to time. Where else do we want to go with this? With this thing.
I have a quick question for you guys. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you said that you rented the Blu-ray from the library of this, right?
Yep.
Sam, how did you watch it?
I rented it on. I am dating myself by saying iTunes, but what would now be what was iTunes would now just be called Apple TV.
Okay, so I watched it for free on Tubi. You know, nice. Shout out Tubi.
Shout out Tubi.
But there were a couple of points where it had what is in my mind like TV movie, like fade to black, like. We just finished a scene and we're going to fade out. And this is where, like, you know, the next progressive commercial comes on. We're going to be off the movie for the next 2 minutes. Was that in the versions that you guys saw, or there were a couple of just like weird cuts, I guess.
I don't remember specifically, but I can I can go back and check.
Nothing comes to mind off the top of my head related to that.
I didn't get that vibe. I thought, like, again, I was surprised at the, like, the first 10 to 20 minutes of this movie, it wasn't that it was bad. There was just some, like, telltale signs of, like, oh, this is low budget. Like, I didn't recognize anybody outside of Nick Cage, and there was just a few telltale signs of, like, okay, I don't think this was an overly expensive movie to produce. So I was, like, when things started picking up, I was pleasantly surprised at, like, how good I thought it was. So, but I didn't notice any like weird quality issues like that. When you're deciding where to watch a movie, Neil, do you ever ask yourself to be or not to be?
Dude, Tubi is so awesome.
I think this is the first movie I've ever watched on Tubi.
Okay. Name a more iconic duo, Gideon and watching a movie for free. Well, or the opposite, where you buy like the 4K Steelbook Blu-ray and you spend like $40 on it.
Yeah, it's either
there is no middle ground for Gideon.
Yeah, exactly. It's either really nice or it's just free.
Yeah. We're either eating out of the garbage or we're going to Manny's Steakhouse. All right, Gideon, anything else you want to kind of hit on in terms of subjects for this movie? I think we got to talk about like the gore, right? I mean, like, We get an alpaca turn, basically like Nick Cage has a alpaca a small, what do you call a group of alpacas? A flock of alpacas and
Look at that.
that are like on the farm
It's a
and
pack of alpacas.
I didn't think it was a pack, but I could be wrong.
No, it's a pack-a.
I'll
A
look it up in the
herd.
meantime. But bit a herd of alpacas. Yeah,
Herd.
he has a small herd, a small harem of
Fluff.
alpacas this week.
Yeah.
And
A jumbled
you know,
mess.
basically they just get dematerialized by this fucking meteor, and that he show he like he walks into the, I almost said the garage, the barn, and they're basically like five alpacas all dematerialized into each other like
Like the
the
thing.
thing. Yeah, it was exactly like the thing. And then when he got to be the best thing in the movie when he just shotguns all the al the al I mean, I was traumatized, but just in terms of Nick Cage being totally insane, watching him kill the alpacas was pretty awesome.
For our viewers, Sam posted in our chat that if anything happened to the alpacas, he was going to be heartbroken. So
And
Sam's
things did
officially
happen for
heartbroken.
the
I'm
thing.
like, boy, we got news for you.
Yeah, I was wondering if either of you had like watched it by the point that I had posted that in the chat.
Oh yeah, I was just like, I can't say anything.
No, I didn't even know there were alpacas in the movie when you posted that. Yeah, spoiler alert, there are alpacas.
He fucking
Well, you know,
flapped.
and like when they present them, it's like, these are not getting out of here alive. Like these, the world is not long for these alpacas. Like the one cute thing in this world, and aside from the cat, this named G Spot, which I thought was super funny.
Oh, really? I was like, Jesus
Yeah.
Christ. One thing I wanted to mention, obviously this movie will get compared to Mandy a lot because, Nick Cage, year apart, same production company, Spectre Vision. And
They
kind of
probably
like
just
what you
kept the lights.
Yeah, honestly, they probably did use some of the same lights and stuff like that. But like what you had said, Sam, with the like being able to harness Cage and his abilities really depends on like the director and different things like that. Whereas I feel like, when I first saw Mandy, I wasn't as hot on it. I probably would have given it like 3, and it's like now grown to like a 5 and definitely an all-time favorite, especially an all-time favorite Nick Cage for me. I feel like there's so much more nuance in his performance in that movie. Whereas this, it kind of like what we had talked about with the ratcheting up and down of the crazy factor and craziness, or some people might call it overacting and stuff like that. I just feel like it was much better executed in that movie. And I like wanted to like this movie more than I ended up liking it. But it did like definitely make me want to go and check out the. Is it a short story, Neil? The Color Out of Space,
Yeah,
or is it? Okay.
pretty much everything Lovecraft wrote is a short story. I don't think he has like any novels.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if he had any like full novels, but that's
That
good
makes
to
me
know.
so much more interested as somebody who can't commit to full novels.
Yeah,
Well,
most
maybe.
of it, he was kind of like Charles Dickens. Like everything that he published was like in like a monthly magazine or newspaper kind of thing. And then,
Or
but
wasn't Poe kind of like that too? Like a lot of short
probably.
stories? Yeah.
Neil, maybe you know this, maybe you don't. Was he more appreciated after he died?
I would say so.
Okay. He just got more and more popular over the years.
Yeah.
Okay. Jesus, do I
I think there's
know?
a lot of like projection of himself into his stories where like a lot of his characters will be like a struggling writer from a once prestigious wealthy family.
Did you guys expect the alien to be, well, first of all, we never really see, it's like an extraterrestrial force, but it's not like there's a singular alien. It's just like a presence, right? I think that's like one of the really
Right.
cool things about this movie is that it's just like this meteor infests the area around it with crazy shit.
Right. Aside
Yeah.
from maybe the praying mantis, but that's probably just a mutated praying mantis, right?
Yeah, that's not the creature itself.
Yeah. It's more like it, the name suggests, the color, and it's like fucking with everything around it.
I think that's just really, it's so unique for a movie. I mean, I know that The Thing is kind of the same thing and that we never see it, but that's implied that it's like an organism, like a physical, biological organism. You get the feeling that the color out of space is really just like a force.
Yeah, because it's contaminating the water. It's like altering the crops. It's altering the animals. And, you know, let's not jump over. You know, it's altering the wife and the youngest child who get fucking fused together.
Yes, that was what I was going to bring up. I was expecting, I was like, when it lasers the mom and the child, I was like, okay, they're just going to cut. And it's just going to be a big black spot on the ground. Like, they just got hit with the Death Star laser. I was not expecting them to be fused together in a, again, John Carpenter-esque The Thing kind of way. And then I was super not expecting it to evolve. Like, when they, like, go into the... When Nick Cage grabs the daughter and, like, throws her in the attic and is like, I'm going to feed you to the mother. And then it has, like, six legs. I was like, holy fuck. That scared the shit out of me when that thing jumped across the room. Yeah.
No, I really enjoyed the pacing with that because, like, we see the, like, radiation beams or whatever. We know that the mom and the kid have both been hit, but we don't see them for like another, like, you know, it's not like they don't have a ton of time to delay it, but they delay it by like 5 or 10 minutes of like Nick Cage is like looking at them, but you don't see what he's seeing. He's like, let's get them inside. You see like the mom, like she looks kind of burned for a bit. And then you see the son like growing out of her back. And they're making like these like croaking frog screams because like they're
The noise was bad.
Oh no, like, but I mean like it was amazing. Like, but that was where I needed to take a break. I was like, I will come back to this.
Yeah. See, like it isn't so much the body horror itself that gets to me. It really freaks me out. Like it isn't really so much a body horror thing. It's like when normal good people aren't doing anything wrong in a movie and then something is happening to them that's making them feel sick, that like that really disturbs me. So like a good example of this is like, you know, in Cloverfield when the girl gets bit by the bug and she's getting sick and then she pops, like that shit drives me up the wall. And it's because like it's not that she like, you know, it's not like a monster jumped out and just sliced her head off and she's done. Like it's like me thinking about feeling sick and gradually feeling worse is like my nightmare. So that and this where they're like, oh, let's get her into bed. I'm like, oh Jesus, just fucking shoot her. Like I couldn't stand the feeling of being that helpless and that sick. Like it just like, the something about that, like that was my personal trauma for this movie was the alien laserifying them and them still being alive.
Right. And wasn't that after we saw the alpaca scene, right? Like them getting fused together?
Yeah. It's like they're just like,
no.
I want to say yes. I just can't remember.
I think the kids go in and they like see the alpacas, but we don't see the alpacas.
Right.
Then like they leave, family gets fused together. Nick Cage then goes and kills the alpacas and then comes back upstairs with the shotgun.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm. And then late, like as he's going crazier and he's like making out with his fused wife and there's like strands of,
oh yeah,
between their lip. Oh man.
How about her like lapping up the water from the bowl? That was disgusting. Yeah.
That almost reminded me, did either of you think of Audition when she was lapping the water from the bowl?
Yeah.
I didn't make that connection, but
God man, we've watched some fucked up movies on this podcast. What's wrong with all of us?
Oh man.
I was just scrolling around and I saw something from the Cure movie we saw and then thinking about Audition, thinking about Us. It's no wonder everybody thinks that we're fucking psychos. It's no wonder I don't talk about this podcast at work. Well, guys, We're coming up on an hour, believe it or not. Speak now or forever hold your peace.
I wanted to mention too, just with like kind of some of my gripes with like the character logic that was bothering me, but and I know they're all pretty much crazy at this point, but I thought it was almost like cruel in the sense of like he does end up putting the wife and daughter or wife and younger son out of their misery and like shoots them, you know. I was like, man, you could have done this like 40 minutes ago, like when you dragged, even before you dragged him upstairs to the attic. And, you know, obviously this is him just being totally crazy at this point when he like throws Lavinia, the daughter, in there with him to get eaten. And then he's like, he was almost like, oh, I need to have a drink. It's been really stressful. You know, he's just like watching the news or something. I was like, oh my God. And just like I thought it was just so I just kept thinking it was so strange how like the hydrologist was almost like the be all end all, like you got it all figured out, like you can help us. And it's like the sheriff, you know, at least he kind of came through and helped out a little bit, but then he got pretty quick.
I did really like that effect of the like tree branch like swing down, just yeah, scooping him off screen.
No, that was awesome. And I liked the set for Tommy Chong's area. I thought that was really cool. Last thing I want to ask you guys, did you have any particular moments that like startled you or anything like that? Like, I remember when the parents are coming home from the hospital and they see that like skinless or hairless cat. That really fucking got me.
That one didn't get me. The
spider mom boy thing.
Yeah, when mom had evolved into like the spider creature, that was pretty rough. Although like I don't, you know, like I think it is a body horror movie, but like I didn't think it was a particularly scary movie, but it did trip my whole thing, like I just said, of people feeling sick and getting and progressively getting worse in movies. So that like there was, I almost had the same reaction as Neil, where there was a moment in the second half of this movie where I was like, I feel bad right now. Like I just feel gross and like not nauseous, but like I don't want to be watching this anymore. Like this is fucked up.
Like your stomach churn kind of.
Yeah. Where I was just like very uncomfortable watching it. And you know, but that's good, right? I mean, like if a movie makes you feel something, right? You know, like if it makes you feel bad, at least it's making you feel something. It's not like, you know, eating paper.
Right. Like it's accomplishing what it's trying to do.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I think one element of Lovecraft's writing that they get across here really well that kind of adds to that is that most of the time these like supernatural elements are not evil per se. Like they're just inhuman. Mm-hmm. And like in this case, like I think, you know, there's all this stuff going on with like phones not working, the TVs and computers are all like kind of glitching out and like to me kind of look like they had like weird faces in them. I think like there's an interpretation that can be made here where it's like this is just the entity trying to communicate and it's fucking everything up in that attempt, but it's not malicious. It just doesn't, it, we are as like strange to it as it is to us.
It's the same way as like a virus isn't evil.
Yeah.
You know, like a disease isn't evil. We perceive it as being like evil because it's affecting us, but it's just trying to live. It's just trying to like do its thing. I think I'm ready to assign a score. This is going to sound way out of pocket. I'm going to give this one a 4. I enjoyed it much more than I thought I was going to, and that holds a lot of water with me. As I thought, especially in the second half, it was a great special effects movie. We get like 2 or 3 really high quality Nicolas Cage freakout scenes. I think he's utilized maybe not with enough discretion, but I think he's utilized well. I think he was well cast in this movie. Everybody else is take it or leave it, but Nobody's bad, but everybody kind of like pales in comparison to like how well Nick Cage is used, like in especially the second half of this movie where he's doing that vampire's kiss thing, and I was just like laughing out loud. It was so funny to like watch him. It's one of cinema's great joys to watch Nick Cage flex that particular muscle because nobody else really does it like that. And I just think he's like such a unique force. So I'd say a 4 for me. Like the lowest possible 4, the highest possible 3, but I'm gonna err on the side of a 4 just because I was positively surprised. How about you, Neil?
I think I'm gonna basically come down the same way as you. This sort of movie is like not gonna be a 5 for me just because of my own feelings mm-hmm. about body horror. Mm-hmm. But I went into this like kind of expecting this to be just a total piece of shit.
Yeah, me too.
It's free to stream on Tubi, and it's from the past like 5 years. Oh, it's got to be terrible. Like, and so the fact that like I enjoyed it and like there was as much production value to it as there is, like I was like very impressed. Hmm. I think I'm gonna come down on the side of giving it a 3, just because, again, I think that there are enough like issues with pacing, issues with characterization, you know, what they chose to keep and what I assume is like on the cutting room floor, that it's just like not quite a 4 for me, but like it's damn close.
Yeah, I feel you. I'm like right there with you. I think my personal predication toward the Nickster is kind of pushing it over the edge for me. How about you, Gid?
Yeah, I really wanted to like this more than I ended up. I would give it like a low 2, honestly. Mm-hmm. I like the special effects. I love Nick Cage. I thought, aside from like him, Tommy Chong a little bit, the hydrologist, and maybe his wife to a degree, I felt like a lot of the other acting was really poor. Like, I thought the kids were, like, especially the daughter, I thought she was just super fucking annoying a lot of the movie. And like at the very end of the movie, the hydrologist he's like standing on top of a dam and he's like, "And I know I'll never drink that water." I'm like, "We get it, dude. The water is bad." You've told
the ending
us
of this movie
everyone,
sucked. The last 5 minutes I thought was really bad.
I was like, "No one's gonna listen to you about not drinking the water." They talk about drinking the well water. Tommy Chong is like a super stoner and he's a squatter. Like, so it's just like different things like that. It just kind of fell apart for me in different ways. And it's like the cool visuals couldn't totally save it for me. I'm glad I watched it. And like I said, I'd be more keen to read the story for this one. But yeah, I just didn't end up liking it as much as I wanted to. I did read on the trivia. not so fun fact, but I guess this was supposed to be the start of a trilogy of movies by that Richard Stanley guy. But then I think his partner accused him of domestic abuse. And then Spectre Vision like cut all ties with him. And I had like popped on like the making of like featurettes on the Blu-ray. And it was kind of funny in retrospect watching it because they were like, you know, he hasn't directed a movie in like 20 years and he thought he was like done making movies and we knew like he was the perfect guy to do it. And he was talking about how it's so good to be back and he feels at home and da 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 da. And they're like, yeah, he's the perfect guy for this. And I was like, it just all what fell apart. It's like, Jesus Christ.
I know that like SpectreVision is the company name, but isn't SpectreVision like also a technical specification? I mean, you guys probably don't know. That's like,
I have no clue.
I'm going to do a little bit of research on this and report back next week because I've heard that term before, but Spectra with an A, not SpectreVision, like this company's name. So something's going on here.
It does say Elijah Wood is a founder and the creative director. Okay.
Right. Right, but that's of the film company, not of the what I'm referencing.
Right.
Old like technology that's called like I'm not thinking of like CineVision or something like some. It's something like that. Anyway,
I
all right, guys. Well,
quick, before we close, That other like ghost movie you were talking about with Nick Cage, was it Prisoners of the Ghostland?
Yes, it was.
Okay. 2021. Okay.
Right. Like I said, there was like three or four of these movies that all came out within like a few years of each other.
Right. Okay. Cool. Yeah.
I don't think that one got overly good reviews. I don't want to do that for Nick Cage in November. So is it Gideon, is it your pick or is it my pick? Or where are we going?
Is it you after Neil? Or is it me? I honestly can't remember.
I think it's you, Sam, because last two movies were Possession, which I think was good. And
right.
He made us
through
Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Okay. I will find a Nick Cage movie that I want to do, and we will go from there. How about that, guys?
Sounds good.
Alrighty.
All right, guys. I think it might be Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent because Grace has been bugging me to watch that, and I am now honor bound to do as she asks because we are married. So
there you go. Nice.
All right. Yeah, I've been cleaning the house so much. I've been a nice little house husband recently. Nice. All right. I will talk to you guys next week.
That sounds good.
Take care, guys.
Have a good one, boys.
Peace out, guys.
Later.